Thanks for listening to Outcast World. You lock your front door, don't you? You wouldn't go out and leave the front door open. Well, that's essentially what you're doing when you're not using a VPN. Right now, your data is being tracked, stored, and sold by loads of people. For a lot of people that are listening to this show, that is not just annoying, it can also be very risky. NordVPN fixes it. It's fast, it's reliable, it's number one for consumers, and it takes less time to set up than ordering a takeaway. Outcast World listeners can get NordVPN for under £3 a month. That is up to 75% off. Just go to outcastworld.net. The link's at the top. Turn it on. Forget about it. Make yourself safer online with the number one NordVPN for under £3 a month at outcastworld.net. All right, welcome to Outcast World. It's Graham Smith. On today's show, we're going to go full yin and yang. We're going to go opposite ends of the cultural spectrum. First up, a bit of Essex sparkle. I am joined by Harry Durbridge from the BAFTA award-winning reality series The Only Way Is Essex. He's one of the original cast members, openly queer since the very get-go, and his latest stint has been the last 5 years. It's Towie, obviously. To those in the know that love the show, and there's lots of them. The brand new series kicks off this Sunday, 9 p.m. on ITV2 and ITVX, and it's already promising sun, sea, drama, a row or two, a row or lots, actually, apparently rather quickly, as we're about to discover. Joining us on the show today, we're really excited about this. It's Harry Durbridge from Towie, which is back with a new series on Sunday, 9 p.m, ITV2 and ITVX, all filmed in Portugal. It's nice, yeah, work if, well, you can get it.
The first four are filmed in Portugal.
Okay.
And then the rest is in our home of Essex.
But you got to go out there and sort of do a lot of the drama by the pool.
So we spent about, I think it was like 10 days in Portugal, and we filmed every day. From the second we got there, we were filming every day.
Okay. So this is because Towie's now 15, isn't it?
So, yeah, it's our 15th anniversary, which is, like, crazy to us, because obviously me, Amy, and obviously got Lauren Goodger back on the show, and we all are, like, have been been part of the show for 15 years, which is crazy. So I think it's gone 15 years. Just shows, I think, how much everyone just loves Towie still.
It does, doesn't it? It's so mad that it's been 15 years. That I didn't believe it when someone told me the other day. So when you arrive in Portugal and you're all round the pool, it's all picture perfect. I've seen some pictures of it. How long before there's an argument?
I think about 0.5 seconds. No. So basically, I can't spoil too much because obviously the eps are coming out, but it is literally day one, straight away, no messing around. I think I get screamed at because I'm hanging around with girl band and I'm being called a mean girl.
Right.
I think there's a clip on the advert at the minute which obviously shows Jordan and Freddie getting into quite a heated exchange. So it literally was the matter of literally us landing, getting to the hotel, checking in, putting an outfit on, going to filming around the pole, and everyone kicking off.
I saw you on that. You're on this. Were you on this morning earlier this week with the,
yeah,
our
I was
very
on
own
this
Andy
morning
Peters?
On Monday.
Okay, so they said this is the story that I heard, that at one point you wanted to move to LA, didn't you?
So me and Amy, yeah. we there's actually so much more to that story, and it was actually Amy that said it, but we always had this idea, me and Amy, when we were young, we were single, before she had the kids, that we were going to do something. Because originally, me and Amy got asked, this is actually like top secret, but I'm going to just tell you anyway. Me and Amy years ago got approached to do a UK version of The Simple Life.
Okay, yeah.
And we're talking years ago, and they wanted us to go out to LA, they wanted us to film in Essex, and basically recreate a UK version of the Paris Hilton and Nicole Richie Simple Life. And we did start filming it. We did start doing little bits, but it never come ahead. And it ended up just like never happening, which it's a shame because it would have been so amazing. But that when we was going through that, we was thinking, you know, we're going to go to LA. Why don't we go to LA, spend a bit of time in LA. We went to LA for a week, worked for us. We missed Essex too much.
But it's true. It's so far away and it's so different. I think LA's really hard to kind of get to know people in. When I went over there, I was like, this is such a weird place. It's all spread out, isn't it? It's not like anywhere else.
Yeah.
It's kind of really weird.
We thought they were going to be like us. Raimi was like, typical Amy walking around with her rollers in her hair. I was all looking at her like, what's she doing that for?
But you're one of the OG cast members, aren't you? You've been there since day one. I know you left and you come back a little bit, but how did you end up back on the show this time around?
So I actually said it on this morning the other day. So obviously we done it from day one. So all them 15 years ago. And then obviously me and Amy, we come, we went, we, do you know what I mean? Like things happen in our life where it felt like it was right to be on the show at the time. And then we took steps back and we thought we need to work on other things. But when it comes to the 10-year anniversary for TOWIE, which obviously 5 years ago now, so they said to Amy about going back. They said to me about doing there was like a 10-year anniversary special episode. Yeah. So I done them and then whilst I was filming the anniversary episode, they went, oh, can you just come next week as well and just do a scene with Amy? So I went, yeah, do you know what? No, what? Listen, it's 10 years. We love TOWIE, of course. So I done that scene and then never left.
Still 5 years later.
So yeah, I've stuck around for 5 years this time. I think it's my longest run.
So you've been openly gay on TV since your teens. How much has the vibe changed from then to now, as you see it? I mean, not just on the show, but generally, do you think people are nicer now?
Yeah.
Or has it got worse?
It hasn't, definitely not worse. I obviously joined at 16 and I was so young. Like, I came at a very, very young age and I was so fortunate to have family that just accepted me for who I was.
How old were you? Sorry to interrupt. How old were you when you came
when
out?
When I come out, I reckon I was about 14.
Right, yeah, I was like 14, 15. It's a different experience, isn't it?
And I always knew, and I feel like for me, it would have been more strange if I said I was straight and had a girlfriend.
Yeah.
So my family just knew, took it, and it was no odds to us. It was just me. So I was very, very fortunate. I know that's not everyone's story, but my family took it and it was easy. So that's why I probably went on TV at such a young age, at 16, and was so open about it because I didn't really see a problem with it.
Yeah.
Obviously, I remember when we all got our shots on TOWIE, and this is like when TOWIE was like, which I'm talking like 13 years ago when it was crazy. People used to come down to Brentwood.
To visit. And yeah, they did, didn't they?
And I always remember this story, and it always stuck in the back of my mind, and my mum will tell you this story as well. So I remember this family coming round to all the shops, going to Amy's salon, going to Lucy's shop, going to Gemma's, and my mum stood outside my shop because she was just doing things, and the family walked past and went, oh, we're not going in that one, in that shop, because he's gay. So that was like 11, 12 years ago. So I remember mum coming in being so like upset about him, being like, why wouldn't they come? What's the problem? So you always still have that person, you still have that people that will never understand it. But times have got moved on so much and things have got so much more better. I mean, TOWIE is dominating at the minute, especially that we've got four openly gay cast members on here, which I think is like one of the most.
It is, yeah.
Like, On reality TV. So like normally you just get one or two, but we've got four, which is so strong. I'd love to say we all get on, the four of us. We don't. But
when do you ever get four gays who just get on? It doesn't happen, does it? That's real life.
But I feel like that in itself is such a step in the right direction to have four openly gay cast members on one reality show. And like we dominate, like the LGBTQ cast, we dominate the show. Like we're always the ones that give the full drama. We give it all. And obviously I've gone through a lot the last year on the show, and so many people see and like supported me and had my back through a lot of stuff. And you know, the fans are amazing. So I feel like the show has like the way the LGBTQ life is in general, it has got better for everyone.
Yeah. You went through a really very public and emotionally complex split on TOWIE. How did that affect your kind of like sense of privacy and your personal boundaries? How did all that feel?
I feel like, so basically me and Amy, we always say, if we're doing this show, we're going to do it, we're going to give everything. Like we don't hold back. Like we don't sit there and go, do you know what, we're going to hold that, we're going to keep that in our private lives. We sign up to do the show, so that's what happens. And it was so public. I don't get me wrong, like, I'm probably still scarred in ways from that that breakup now, because it was so public, and it was so, it was like you lost the boyfriend, you lost the best friend, and it all kind of happened in once. And the betrayal and the nastiness, like, that definitely made me look at life and people a little bit differently. But I feel like when I'm a year down the line now, and I feel like, do you know what? I feel like that was meant to happen to me. I wasn't meant to be with that person. That, and I feel like that was meant to happen. I was meant to see the light and see that this person weren't good for me. So, yeah, a year down the line, I feel like a lot of people are going to see the very healed version of Harry this series.
Okay. A different one. A grown one.
Yeah. I feel like the last two series, I've been very emotional, very crying, very, very trying to heal. I'm healed now.
Good. That's what we like to hear. I wondered, who are your queer role models? Because you're a queer role model now, but do you have any that you look up to? You just think you're fantastic. I love what you're doing.
Well, my number one, I mean, she isn't queer herself, but she does a lot of work for LGBT. Yeah. And that has to be my Lady Gaga.
Oh, she does. I love her. Yes, she does. She puts the work in, don't she?
She really literally is the best. Like, I've got tickets to her concert next month. I will be there. Oh, she's my absolute favourite. And then, who are my favourites? Let's have a little think. Do you know, another thing that always stuck with me, and not putting it on myself and saying, look at me, I'm a role model, but I never forget, before he passed, love his soul, I met Paul O'Grady when Towie first started, and he loved Towie. I remember him coming up to me going, he loved Towie. He was like, this is amazing. He was like, I want to come. Like, I was like, oh my God, 100%. Bear in mind, I was young. And he looked at my mum and he said, your son's a role model. And my mum, I remember he walked away, and my mum burst out crying. She couldn't believe what he just said.
He's lovely. I met him a few times over the years, Paul O'Grady. So I'm from Liverpool. He's from Liverpool. And I met him a few times. He's such a lovely man. I think there's a similarity. He probably loved the show because Scousers and people from Essex do share some similar traits, I think.
I'm going to be honest. I love a Scouser.
Do you?
Love a Scouser. I get on so well with Scousers.
When you said, when you talked about walking around with your rollers in, not you, the girls and stuff, I was just like, that is so home. That is so that home.
I feel like Liverpool and Essex, I think we're like the same people. I think the only thing that is the difference is the accent.
Yeah, totally. It's just a bit of distance and a bit of accent. It's really, really similar. So who are your fave gays on Towie?
Who are my faves?
Who's your faves, yeah. I loved what you're going, none of them.
No comment. They all don't like me, so it's fine.
That's fair enough. Do you think it'll still be here in another 15 years? Do you think 15 years from now we'll be going 45 years or whatever?
Oh my 30. God. I mean, I'd like to say I'll be like the Ken Barlow of Towie and still be going in another 15 years, but I feel like the show will still go on. I feel like it'll be one of them shows that it's like a reality soap.
Yeah.
So it'll continue and continue and continue. And I feel like the show is so powerful. I think in years to come, there'll be a whole new cast. There'll be different people and there'll be new stories and new people to warm to. And I think that's just how it will always go.
It'll just evolve with new people. It'll just represent Essex. Yeah.
Yeah, it'll just keep going. And then me and Amy will pop in for the 50th anniversary.
You must be excited to get it back on TV again.
This series, I know we always say this whenever we do interviews and stuff, but this series is the most dramatic. No one held back. If you are ready for good reality TV, literally this Sunday, ITV, Foo Nash, we're back on our home channel, ITV2, ITVX, and this Sunday. So and we're twice a week again.
Okay.
So I think the fans are like buzzing about that, because we've gone back to our home channel with two eps a week. So it's exciting.
Exciting times. All right, Harry Durbridge, one of the OGs from Towie, which is back. New series Sunday, 9 p.m. ITV2 and ITVX.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. Mwah.
Bye, my love.
And that was Harry Durbridge from Towie giving us a taste of what's coming when the new season lands on Sunday night on ITV2 and ITVX. And a bit of an insight as to what it's been like kind of growing up queer on reality TV in front of the whole country. Like, a really interesting take on that. Now a bit of a culture switch, gear change, halfway through the podcast, handbrake turn. from Essex beaches, from Towie to cultured blooms. We head into the world of high-end floristry with Hamish Powell, the Instagram famous florist who's making waves with his striking cultural arrangements, really saying something. Loads of followers online. He's also very handsome and very charming. This conversation comes from the Boys, Boys, Boys podcast, our deep dive into queer art, photography and culture. And we're bringing it to Outcast World so that you can hear it too. So if the Towie chat was the Prosecco, then let's bring out the champagne. The Boys, Boys, Boys podcast is where we discover art, queer, culture.
Morning.
Is that your morning voice there?
Do I have to explain who Gandalf is? Do I have to explain who Shakespeare is?
We dive into conversations with legendary queer artists and the creatives working with the biggest stars in the world.
The next day I was like, babe, we need to pull this bit together. And so up went the beehive, which was, I think, the first time she did it.
Smart, bold, and beautifully queer. Listen to the Boys, Boys, Boys podcast wherever you get yours.
I was at the University of Manchester in 2016, and I was studying a joint honours in plant microbiology and East Asian linguistics.
Right.
Because I knew I wanted to be a scientist in plants, but I had also been self-teaching myself Mandarin for a very long time. And I thought, why is that, you know, somehow get a qualification for that? Turned out to be a very difficult ambition.
I'll bet.
It was a journey for, I think, less so educational, more so figuring out what my capacity is in life.
Right.
And also, you know, what direction I was going to go in.
Manchester is a great queer city and a city you can really kind of explore who you are in. Did you find that?
Yeah, well, one of the main reasons I chose Manchester was partly because it offered this very niche degree, but also because it was the gayest city I could find when I was looking. Because I was coming from a very small town in Somerset where population gay was me and maybe the other closeted guys at the school. And I needed to feel like I was part of, you know, I wasn't the only gay in the village. And so I looked actively for cities that had a thriving gay population, nightlife community, things like that. And Manchester really stuck out on the map, especially because of Canal Street and sort of the queer world that has originated as a result.
How did you find Canal Street? I feel like Canal Street was... So when I first decided I wanted to go to university in Manchester, it was Queer as Folk had just come on TV in the UK. So it was the late 90s. Mm. And I feel like Canal Street in Manchester and the kind of like the sweet spot at that point. How was it for you when you were there? Because it's changed over the years.
I mean, everyone will always look back on something with sort of a nostalgic sweetness. Nothing will ever be as good as it used to be. And I think that's with everything, with everyone, everywhere. So I can only think about what it was in the present for me. And, you know, I was coming from zero context. And so for me, it was paradise. You know, I'd never seen a drag queen before. And so I spent every weekend, every Wednesday, I think they had like 2-for-1 on Wednesdays or something. I was a resident of GAY Manchester. And we had the crawl, you know, you'd go to GAY Manchester first, and then you go to Cruise 101, and then you go to Kiki. And it was like, and that's where I made so many of my friends as well, because I had never had gay friends before. And so I really think I milked Manchester for the sort of the personal growth aspects, more so than any qualification.
You said you've been dancing with the flowers for 6 years now. Take us back to that. How did a sort of plant science student end up elbow deep? Knee deep, maybe deep in roses and orchids. And where was the moment that you realized, you know what, this is my world, actually?
Yeah, well, I think I've always been a little plant creature. I think I've been a plant myself for my whole life. My mum was a gardener and my dad is a farmer, and so plants have always surrounded me, and they were always my thing. But I never knew what direction I would go in. And I was studying them as a science at university because I was good at biology. And so, you just do what you're good at. And I got a part-time job working at a flower shop to pay for all those nights out at GAY Manchester.
Yep.
And I was just scrubbing the floor, washing vases. You know, I was the little intern kid. And I was very, very curious. Actually, I've always been curious about everything, but especially because flowers were involved. And I just paid a lot of attention in this flower shop. And slowly I gained more trust. And by the end of my degree, so I started working there in my first year. By the end of third year, I was managing the flower shop. And when I graduated, I was at a crossroads of, do I continue pursuing plants as a science, or do I switch gears and pursue them as an art? And I didn't know what to do, really. I couldn't see myself wearing a lab coat for the next 20 years. But at the same time, I saw no future in floristry because I didn't know it was sort of something that could turn into a world as it has for me. I still saw it as a very humble profession, which it is. Mm-hmm. Intrinsically, it's very humble, but I didn't see a scope for it. You know, I've always felt like I wanted to be someone big and famous. Didn't see that in floristry. But the opportunity provided itself to me when I was offered a job in London, working at one of the really big florists here. And because I didn't have any other plan, I said, yeah, why not? I'd never thought about living in London, and this was sort of my key to the city. And so that's what brought me to London. And so, yeah, I started working with this big company, and I stayed there for a couple of years. And then after COVID, I had a moment of reinvention, and I thought, actually, I think I'm too cool for these guys. Let me see if I can figure it out by myself.
The rest is history.
So you've got this background in sort of plant microbiology, very sciencey. How does that sciencey sort of background, for want of a better term, sneak into your artistic process? Are you ever kind of there in the studio feeling like you're kind of like a mad scientist throwing stuff together?
Yeah, I mean, often there are test tubes as well. When I was very young, I wanted to be two things, either a mad scientist or a vegetable gardener. And I think I've somehow combined the two of them.
You have, yeah.
in what I do now, which is great for my inner child, really validating. I do try and introduce science, actually, because it's still in me. I think I'm learning art more than I am science. I think science comes naturally to me, and art I'm having to learn. And so I do approach things, I think, from a more methodical point of view. And the creativity kind of is something I have to work out. It is a bit of left brain, right brain synergy. So I do think, and when I can, I try and introduce these kind of, you know, more sciencey or logistical or naturalistic approaches, which maybe is a bit of a niche and I think can be a strong point. Like I feel like the plants and I speak the same language. I know exactly what they want. I know how to keep them alive. I know what will kill them. And I think I can use that to my advantage. You know, where I'm lacking other things like the color wheel. I don't know what the color wheel is. I don't know what goes with what. I'm winging that, but I know how to keep something alive. I know how to hang it upside down and make it last for 3 weeks.
That's funny. I didn't expect you to say that in your opinion, the creativity is the bit that you've had to try harder at. I wasn't expecting that from you, because I think that looking at what you do, that does not come through at all. So that was a surprise to me. Your queerness, you call it a superpower.
It's definitely a superpower to me because it's a point of difference. I think anything that is something that sets you out from the bigger crowd in any circle that you're in is an advantage. And so I talk about my queerness and my ADHD both as superpowers. You know, in a lot of situations, they can be difficult things to navigate, and people can have misconceptions, preconceptions about them. But I really take them both in my stride. I think the queerness for me has been something that's given me a lot of confidence. I think because a lot of us struggle with feeling proud or overcoming shame, you can sort of bounce past that and just become even more confident and even more sure in yourself. And that's manifested in all areas of my life, in the way I approach people and connecting with people, and but also in work and sort of being sure in myself and not second guessing what I make.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's sort of the whole the feeling of being proud in yourself and trusting who you are and that you're on the right path can be really applicable to so many things in life. And it's a safety net I think I fall back on, is to know that, you know, I figured myself out. Whenever I was, I think I was 15 when I started realizing that maybe I was gay and who I am or what I'm interested into. And, you know, I can go back to 15-year-old me who was brave enough to work out all of that in a vacuum where I had no help and no knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can always go back on that that fact about myself that I can make it work and I can survive.
That you did that so you can do whatever it is that's put in front of you,
exactly.
Kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. It's such, finding, navigating your queerness is such an intimate and formative part of your life that I think, when you come out the other side, you can really look back and see how strong you've been. And yeah, you can conquer anything if you can do that. Gay people are so strong.
Prior to being 15, it's very interesting that 15 was the sort of age that I came out. And my mum always says that that one day I came home and I just had an attitude, not in a bad way. She meant kind of like the kid before then was quite unsure. The kid after that point at 15 was a lot more, well, I'm going to do this and this is what I do. Did you feel that?
Yeah. Yeah. It was certainly after I told people.
Yeah.
I think because before telling people, you don't know if they know you.
Yes.
You know, you don't feel like you're your true self to people. And so you're unsure if I'm not showing my full authentic self to you, then how do I know if you're doing the same to me? And once I became confident and came out, I really felt, yeah, this everything is just open now. I know who everyone is. I know who I am. Therefore, I can figure out everyone else. And I mean, my mum, when I came out, she told me, I was sobbing and sobbing and sobbing. And she was like, oh, is that it? I was like,
cute.
Yeah, what do you mean? She was like, oh, I've known since you were two, darling. You know, we've all known since you were two. We've been waiting for this day for a long time. I was like, oh, well, you could have told me, save me all of the self-development. And she said, no, well, I asked her siblings if I should tell you that you're gay. And they all said it's something you had to find out yourself.
I think she's right, because my mum certainly told me. My mum's like, you're gay. I was like, correct. Right, well done. So I think it just depends on the situation, doesn't it? And also, that's what kind of like that 15-year age gap between you and I will kind of do. I think parents are a lot more learned about stuff like that now. You've said flowers are my muse, are my medium. This is how you show your authentic self, isn't it?
Yeah. I think I would say my two main... No, there's three. There's three forms of expression of myself. Through my flowers, through my writing, and I think through my how I present myself. I think flowers and words, and when I say words, I mean more my poetry. They are two different ways of saying the same thing. Like, they're two alternative routes to getting to the same destination, I think, which is sort of an expression of myself in this medium that is quite subjective. Not everyone has the same taste in flowers, and not everyone will read a poem and come to the same emotion afterwards. And that's what I like about both of these forms of creativity, is that I can tell you something through them, but every single person in the whole world could hear something differently because of their own story, their own taste, their own opinions. And I like that subjectivity. I don't think I want to tell anyone anything directly. I think I want everyone to put a little piece of themselves into something that I create. And then I said that the third way that I think I express myself is through my appearance. And I certainly was a lot more customizable before. I used to dye my hair in all these wacky colors. I used to make half of my mustache pink and the other half green. And then my hair was blue and I was wearing all these weird colorful clothes. When that was a really important phase for me, to sort of be loud and so that I feel colorful. I think a big part of my personality is that I feel like I'm rich in color and that I'm bright and bold. And I'm still all of those things, but I think now I'm more subtle with the way I express it, actually.
And that is it for this episode of Outcast World. Thank you very much to Hamish Powell, the lovely Hamish Powell. The very lovely Harry Durbridge as well from TOWIE. Don't forget that is back on our TV screens. But starting this Sunday night, 9 p.m. on ITV. Do me a favour and like, review, all that kind of stuff with this podcast, wherever you're getting yours. We're back, but before you know it, next time on the show, I have a chat with somebody who used to live in Iran, was born there, growing up queer in Iran, hitting that underground queer scene in Tehran. It's a fascinating chat. It's a great book as well. We'll do that next time on Outcast World. Stay with me. This is incredibly simple. If you've ever used Grindr, Googled something rather personal, or posted anything political, your data is already being tracked and sold. think about that. A VPN can make you a lot safer. NordVPN takes about 2 minutes to set up, one click to turn on, and it just runs in the background. There's no effort after that. It's consistently voted number one across a load of metrics for consumers. It's fast, it's secure, and there's no drop-offs. Outcast World listeners can get up to 75% off NordVPN right now, which brings it down to under £3 a month. Go to outcastworld.net, top of the page, tap the link, then you're done. Outcastworld.net for up to 75% off NordVPN.